Hey guys, welcome to The Whole Veterinarian. My name is Dr. Stacy Cordovano, and you know we've got some stuff going on in this profession of ours. On this podcast, I will speak with outside-of-the-box thinkers to hear new ideas on ways to improve our day-to-day life. I want veterinarians to learn to be happier, healthier, wealthier, and more grateful for the life that we've created. Now let's get started. Hey everybody. My guest today is an internationally acclaimed Grand Prix dressage rider and coach, a wife extraordinaire to a fairly successful three-day event rider, and an absolutely amazing mother to two little boys. Please welcome my friend, Silva Martin. Hi, Silva.
Hi, Stace.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I think that if someone met you today, they would look at your life and be super envious because you've got a great family, a great business, a great home. I think it would be hard for someone to imagine everything you've already experienced in life. I feel like you've lived a lot of life already.
I want to start with your childhood and how you got into horses.
Sure. So I grew up in Germany, as you can tell by my accent. So I grew up in Germany, and doing dressage in Germany is a little bit like doing gymnastics here. So kind of everybody does it. And my parents were very supportive, even though they're not horse people. And I loved it. And my dad is an attorney, was an attorney. He still supported what I wanted to do. He said, you know, you just need to be the best at what you do, because if you're not the best at it, it's a terrible job. And it's very true. I did the brightest exam in Germany. It's like a proper apprenticeship. It's a little bit like becoming a plumber or electrician here. Now you go to school and you can't just decide to be a professional rider. It doesn't work that way in Germany. And then I was offered a job in Australia. You know, I was offered some money, which I never really made any money before. And I didn't speak any English. So the person, Rudolf Zeilinger, who I was working for, said, you really need to speak English if you want to do this on an international level. So I thought, I got for 6 months and learned the language and actually make some money for a change. Then I was stuck there for 5 years.
And what exactly kept you in Australia? A handsome young bloke, as he would like to say, I'm thinking.
Yeah, so I arrived in Australia, I think it was June of 2001. I was 21 years old, and I didn't speak a word of English, which was rough. Especially Australian English is not so easy as well. And then I met Boyd at a dressage show with a broken leg, I think that same month. I didn't understand one word that guy was saying, but I didn't know anybody. And he offered to, you know, for me to go to the races and do stuff with other young people, which I was excited about because I didn't really know anybody and I didn't speak the language. And I thought maybe this will, you know, give me a kickstart. And then I ended up with him.
All these years later.
Yeah.
So, okay. So you guys get married. He leaves you in Australia.
Yeah.
What's the plan there?
Well, first of all, in the beginning of 2006, we came here because Boyd was doing Rolex Kentucky. And then when we went back to Australia, we decided that this was a great place to live. And also it's closer to Europe. So for Boyd and I both showing internationally, it's much closer to go to Europe and do competitions there. So we hooked up with Philip Dutton, who was also an Australian, and we decided to move here. So we packed up everything in Australia, like our house, sold everything, sent horses over here. Then we got married December of 2006. Boyd came over here and I got stuck in Australia because of the visa. So I was stuck in Australia for 4 months after we got married, which was probably the best time of our marriage. No fighting. And then I came over here and then we kind of got going.
Got it. So you guys were based at Philip Dutton's initially, where you got your start.
Yeah. So Philip and Evie was just so great because they gave us a house, a car, and a job each, which was incredibly generous of them to get us started.
Yeah. So it's not like you just walked into America and were Boyd and Silva Martin.
No. We had a job. No, nobody knew us, obviously. So even though I'm not an event rider, I did a lot of dressage on Phillips horses, and you know, we just worked like everybody else at Phillips, but I met some of our best friends while working there.
So you'd been here for a few years, and then in 2011, there was a major barn fire.
Yeah, so everything was great until 2011, and then she hit the fan.
Oh, I don't think I'm allowed to swear on my podcast.
I'm sorry.
I'll bleep it out.
Anyways, first of all, I'd like to say that there's people out there that have it way harder than us. People look at our lives and they go, oh my God, these people have gone through a lot, which we have, but we have an amazing life and nobody should feel sorry for us at all, because there's people out there that have it way, way harder than we do. And you just got to pick up when things don't go well and keep going. And we did have to learn that the hard way, but it is very true.
Oh, for sure. I think that's a little bit what I meant when I said for people just meeting you or just getting to know you, no one would ever imagine all of the trials and tribulations that you guys have gone through in the past few years.
Yeah.
So I want to get into how you kind of pick yourself up, but let's talk about the bonfire.
Yeah. So when I were teaching a clinic in New York, in upstate New York, in Millbrook, which we've done for, I think, 12 years now, and Memorial Day weekend, we were teaching there for 4 days and we were driving home really late. We were driving by the upper barn at Phillips. That's the barn that we rented and then burned down. We were driving by there and everything was fine. And we get home, we go to bed, we're exhausted from 4 days of teaching. The middle of the night, I don't know, maybe it was 1 o'clock in the morning or midnight, I'm not sure, but the phone started ringing. Boy's phone was downstairs, so we didn't hear that. But then my phone kept ringing. So it was Caitlin Silliman, who worked for us at the time. And I couldn't understand what she was saying. She was completely in a panic. She was living above the barn at the time. And I just said, Boyd, you get up, you got to go. And he ran out quickly, threw some clothes on and just ran out the door. And I was sitting in bed, not knowing what was happening. It was horrible. So I called my really good friend, Dr. Mary Griffin, and she picked up the phone in the middle of the night. And she said, she didn't understand what I was saying because I was crying so much. And she said, don't, I don't need to know what's happening. Just tell me where I have to be. Just, I'm going to get in my car now. Just tell me where I have to be. And so she drove over there. And then by that time, I don't really know how I got there, but I went straight to New Bolton Center with Mary, and there was horses that died. And, you know, at the time I didn't really think about that. My husband was pretty close to dying because he ran back into the barn to get some of the horses, including his world question horse, Neville Bartos. And I was at New Bolton just, you know, being with the horses that were completely on fire. So that was rough. And then we lost everything. Everything. Our entire business was gone. We lost 6 horses and all our tack, everything. Luckily, no humans were hurt. We just moved to our new farm, so my horses actually weren't at Phillips anymore. Mm. And I remember sitting on the steps on our back porch the next morning, just completely empty. We had nothing. Like, it was just surreal. And we had incredible support. I mean, that is what made us really fall in love with this country, because people were like putting their lives on hold for us all over, like everywhere. Help came from all sides. And that was an incredible experience for us, because we hadn't experienced that before.
And then mentally, where do you even like restart from that point? You're just like
so the very first few days were just a blur, because you don't really know what to do.
Sure, they're still hospitalized horses.
Yeah, so we spent pretty much all day at New Bolton with our horses and just trying to kind of wrap our head around how we're gonna start again. Boyd is a survivor, always been, and Boyd is probably the most positive, annoyingly positive person I've ever met. So for him, I've been with him for 15 years, never once is he thinking this is it or how are we going to do this. For him, it's always like, fine, just pick up and we'll be all right. It'll be all right. In Australia, you say, should be right. That's how he's like, should be right, it'll be fine. Don't stress about it. So that helps, even though it's annoying.
Sure, got it. And the rest of 2011 wasn't easy on you guys as a family either, right?
No. So then after we picked up the pieces and dealt with all the insurance and all of that, Boyd's dad, he was in a bike race. The Martin family are big sporting people. So he was in a bike race and he hit a truck with a bicycle. So his mom and sister called us and said, you know, Boyd better get over here because this is not good. So we, both of us, flew to Australia, and Boyd's dad just kind of hung on until Boyd got there because he really wanted to talk to Boyd. And so we spent 2 days with him, and he passed away it was his own choice. He didn't want to be, you know, dependent for the rest of his life. So he decided to turn off the machines, and that was good because it was his choice. And that's a little bit easier than losing a family member that doesn't want to go.
Sure.
So that was rough. Boyd was completely devastated. Boyd was very, very close with his dad, and his dad was an incredible person. So we lost him, and then we came home, and then I went to Lexington, Virginia that next weekend because I had already entered it. So I went with six horses, which was a good distraction. And then my dad had been battling with cancer for 5 years. By then, he was at the hospital again, and my mom called and said, you know, I don't know how this is going to go this time. You better come home. So I'm like, oh my God, you gotta be kidding me. So then I drove home. I had a flight that night to Germany. I don't know how long I was there, but anyway, I said goodbye to my dad. He passed away. That was 18 days after Boyd's dad passed away. Boyd's dad passed away on my dad's birthday, July 2nd. And then my dad passed away on the 20th of July. And then Boyd flew over for the funeral. Then we got back to America and we were just numb.
I can't even wrap my head around all that.
Yeah, we were just numb. We were just, I remember just sitting with Boyd on our bed and just, we were just like, what else? We were devastated. Boyd lost his dad. I lost my dad, who we were very close to. And on top of that, my dad and Boyd's dad were very good friends. So that was, that was really rough. And then, you know, we got up the next morning and just tried to get on with it. It was very, very hard. And thinking back, it still makes me kind of really upset even talking about it. But
yeah, thank you for sharing. I really appreciate your candidness.
We just kind of went into work and just, you know, kept going.
Yeah.
And, you know, just kind of made it better. And then we had some good success and all of that helps. And, we have two strong families, which also helps. And my friends were incredible. So, you know, life goes on.
Holy cow. Yeah. You threw yourself into work, I imagine.
Uh-huh.
That really did pay off because then your success in 2014 was your first appearance on a U.S. team for the Nations Cup in Wellington.
Yes.
And then what happened after that?
I got invited to ride on the Nations Cup team, which was incredibly exciting for me. So I was riding my homebred mare, Rosa Chow, who's my heart horse, and she was incredible. We won the Nations Cup, so that was surreal. As surreal as it was losing everything in 2011, being up there, just kind of things happen, but good things also happen. So you got to think of those things. And the next day, that was on a Sunday, that I won the Nations Cup. The Monday or Tuesday after I won the Nations Cup, I was riding a horse of my friend, and I was just riding the horse before I was teaching her. And the mare, I remember I heard piaffing in the mirror, and then the arena had like one of those white fences around, like the ones you just put up, you know? And she put one hind leg over it and just tripped behind, like fell down all the way behind and hit me in the head. And that knocked me out. And then she put the front leg over and fell all the way over. So the horse didn't do anything wrong. She just tripped. Like it was not at all like a very eventful like buck or me being just an, you know, incredibly good rider. It was just that the horse tripped. And then I fell with the horse and hit my head again. So I got hit in the front and then I got hit in the back. And I had a brain bleed and I had a seizure and the helicopter came and took me to Delbury Medical Center. So I had a mid-brain bleed, which you can't operate on. So it was a little bit touch and go at the time. Boyd was at Red Hills for an event. So he got in his car and drove there and I was obviously in a coma. My incredible friends, Mary Griffin and Kate Hicks, packed up their stuff. Kate packed up her kids and flew to Florida and they were there when I woke up. The bleed stopped, thank God. I woke up and from then it was rough times. Like I had to learn how to walk and how to talk and how to do anything really. So, you know, you have incredible highs and then you have incredible lows and yeah, that's kind of life, I guess.
The lows make the highs better, I guess.
Yes.
When you were going through recovery, we had just kind of gotten to know each other at that point, I think. And I was amazed at your determination to get back quickly. Is that just innate in you? Is that?
Yeah, I think that's me. It's not that I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a tough person. I'm going to get up. I'm going to do it. I think it's me. And all I wanted is to be myself. All I wanted is to be not dependent. I didn't have a driver's license for a year. I was in the hospital for 2 months. I was at outpatient therapy for 9 months. I wanted to just walk. I just wanted to walk. I wanted to be out of the wheelchair. My good friend Amy's mom lived with me. I couldn't walk to the bathroom. It was incredibly hard to be so dependent. And I've met amazing people in their therapy who are not as lucky as I am that I recovered. So me even talking about, you know, having lost an eye or, you know, having to struggle for 9 short months, I feel rude because those people don't come out of their misery. And I did. The therapists were not happy with me because I wanted to do more and more and more and more because I just wanted to get better. I mean, I was practicing walking probably 18 hours a day because I just wanted to be myself. I didn't want to be this person that has to be led around with a belt because it was rough. And I started riding before I could walk, and people, especially my friends, were horrified, but I needed to do that. I wasn't riding like I'm riding now, but I was at least riding with one person leading the horse and 2 people holding me out there. But I just wanted to feel some kind of of my normal life. Again, that high of then winning the Nations Cup was then followed by this incredible low. And, you know, you come out of that as well.
Yeah. Does Boyd's positivity and work ethic at that point make a difference for you?
Yeah. So, yes. Because for Boyd, in his mind, there's not ever being stuck, which is incredibly annoying because it was really hard times for me. But for Boyd, there was never a question in his mind that I'm going to just come out of it. And I it never was for me either, I have to say. Like, I wasn't ever laying there thinking it's just going to be me for the rest of my life. It wasn't. Yeah, he doesn't do well with any kind of complaining. So there's no, you can't do it.
Certainly, I know that there are emotional dysregulations associated with traumatic brain injuries. So I can imagine that was difficult to manage if someone's not fully understanding that.
Yes, yes.
You had another high after that. Your first child was born.
Yeah, so Knox was born in September 2015. And that was, you know, I was just flying through the pregnancy. It was easy. I was never sick. And I thought, you know what? I'm pretty good at this. My friends had children and they, you know, they were sick and there was complications. I'm like, yeah, I've had a lot of bad stuff happen. So this is, having kids is like not a big deal.
This is my jam.
Yeah, it was easy. I'm like, bring it on, you know? So then I was pregnant with Knox 8 months and I sold the young horse and it was leaving. So the girls had trouble getting him on the trailer. So I'm like, oh, just hand me the horse. I'll do it. I was 8 months pregnant. And so the horse pulled me backwards. And unfortunately, there's a tractor parked next to the trailer that I was loading the horse into. And I hit my head. So I was knocked out. The ambulance came. Luckily, I didn't have a brain injury. The baby was fine. And then I had Knox. And then again, I got pregnant 2 years later, and then I had a terrible pregnancy, which is funny because I was so happy about my first pregnancy. Turns out I had a blood condition called KELL, K-E-L-L. I had to go through infusions for the entire pregnancy for 9 hours each Thursday, and it was a touch and go kind of thing because nobody was sure that Leo was going to live.
So wait, I just want to give a brief overview. The anti-KEL antibodies create an autoimmune hemolytic anemia in affected babies, and it's pretty rare, and the IVIG transfusion therapy that you went through is somewhat experimental, I know.
Yeah, so I had to, you know, quit riding 6 weeks into the pregnancy, and pretty much for the entire time I was pregnant, all I did was run to doctor's appointments and just trying to get this child to survive. And then at the end, I was pregnant for 6 months and 3 weeks. And the doctor said, this is it. We're going to have to get him out. So then I had a C-section and got him out. And then he obviously was tiny. We were at the NICU for 6 weeks. My really good friend, Stacey Cordovano, organized living for me in Philadelphia. And so I moved to the city with my older son, Knox, and the nanny, and, you know, spent a half the day at the hospital and half the day with Knox. And so my business was put aside. And lucky I have my girls who kept it going for me. And then we got Leah home and everything turned out fine.
You play off handling the NICU and moving to the city as no big deal, but I remember in the midst of it thinking how amazingly you were handling things, traveling back and forth some days. As his stay got longer, you were pumping in the cars. You drove to Philly and then pumping on the way back to ride a few horses. It was really, you downplay it a little bit, but it was a lot of juggling on your part. And, you know, you make it sound easy, but I think you should also acknowledge all of the hard work that you put into that period of life, besides kind of the emotional distress of having a NICU baby, because that's a big deal.
Yes, yes. But yeah, the boys are great. I mean, maybe they're killing themselves right now out there, but...
We can hear them slowly killing themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going again, and I feel like I got a second wind.
Yep, you are definitely back. I know that the boys bring you a ton of joy. How do you kind of balance work right now with motherhood?
Well, I have such good help. I have a nanny who's been with us since Knox was 3 months old. I can work from 7:30 till 3:30. And then, you know, when I go to shows and stuff, the boys come with me with the nanny. It's like every mom knows, it's hard to balance. But I think once you have a routine, you can do it.
Yes. Awesome. Do you think that you have any weaknesses?
Do I have weaknesses? Oh, I'm sure I have lots of weaknesses. I guess my weakness is that I try to pack in too much into the day. And I've been like that always. My mom always says this has always been me. So I try to fit in so much that, I get overwhelmed at times, which people don't think I do, but I do. And I have to say the whole coronavirus thing was good for me because it kind of put a brake on things. Like I try to do a lot of activities and it just gets too much. And then I don't have a good time doing it. And nobody has a good time doing it. So, you know, my weakness is that I try to do too much and I just need to sometimes just sit back and, you know, just do less.
So you're learning.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to ask, you know, I kind of joked about your fairly successful husband and we've mentioned him throughout the interview, but how do you balance supporting both your family, your dreams, and your husband who's, you know, ranked number 7 in the world currently as an inventor?
I guess this has all changed a little bit since I have kids because it really slowed down my career, which is not a bad thing at all. I love being a mom and I decided to just kind of take a backseat a little bit of showing internationally because I want to be a good mom and I will be back doing it at the big stage. But for now, I'm happy to be a mom and not try to do the international competition at the same time. Boyd is very supportive of what I do, also because I'm not doing the same discipline as him. Boyd, he lives for winning. He lives for being an Olympian. He always has. I knew what I was marrying, and there's no point in ever complaining about it. If you ride or compete any sport at that level that he does, he's done 2 Olympic Games, 3 World Equestrian Games. You have to be a selfish person to be able to be competitive at that level. And that is clear to me. And that's the way it is. So for him, he'd rather be dead than second. So he is very supportive of me, but nothing will get in his way of where he wants to go and what he wants to do. So I'm behind him. I helped him for so many years with the dressage and I support him probably not as much anymore since we had kids than what I used to do. And he complains about that all the time.
You're not fixing all of his lead changes?
Well, no, I am still doing that, but I'm not, you know, don't pack his bags anymore.
Got it.
It's really fun being with a person at that level, which people envy. It's also not easy to be with people like that because they have to be selfish. And it's a complicated life because you don't know where they are. And like in his brain, he does everything in his power to be at that level.
But it's a dynamic that you guys have decided on for your family that's working.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Got it. The podcast is geared towards vets. And I think certainly traumatic brain injuries is relevant. You know, even just in the past week, we've had several colleagues in our Facebook group have head injuries, one being a significant traumatic brain injury. So I think it's relevant. But the main goal of my podcast is to kind of open people's eyes to different ways to develop themselves. And certainly picking yourself up after adversity is something we can all learn from. I ask every guest, what's one small thing that has brought you joy this past week?
Last week, we had an above ground pool, and my entire childhood, all I wanted was a pool. So eventually, we're going to build a proper pool, but the kids love it, and I finally got my pool.
Awesome. That's an excellent thing to bring you joy. Thank you so much for spending time with me. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time and your honesty, and thank you for being a good friend.
Thank you, Stacey.
Thank you all for listening in today, and thank you so much to Silva Martin for spending some of her super busy day chatting with me. Silva's positivity and mental toughness is nothing but remarkable and contagious. I am really in awe of the things that she and her family have weathered. She proves that leaning into family and friends is hugely important during the tough time. If you as a veterinarian ever feel like you need a little help, I'm happy to connect you with some of the amazing resources available to us. I'll also link a few things in the show notes. Again, thank you so much for spending some of your valuable time listening to my podcast. If you have one extra minute, I'd love a Facebook or Instagram message with some of your thoughts on the show or ideas for new topics. I hope you have an awesome week, and I'll talk to you next Thursday.